Welcome to NFCC's Guide Through the Seasons of Mental Wellness. I'm your host, Anna Crane, a licensed social worker and outreach counselor at Nick Finnegan Counseling Center here in Houston, Texas. You are not alone. Saying this to someone who is struggling may be the most comforting thing that you could say to them. There are 8 billion people on this earth. Of course we're not alone, but there are times in life when it certainly feels like we are. Times when it may be difficult to talk about what you're going through. In this season of the Seasons of Mental Wellness, we get vulnerable and talk about how to overcome struggles, struggles that are more common than you may think, with someone who's been through it. I'm your host, Anna Crane. Now let's get into today's episode. Welcome, Becky. I'm so happy to have you here. I would love to start with you telling us a little bit about you and tell us about your job and why you started sharing your life on Instagram and all about your health journey. Just like, let us have it.
Yes. Hi, everyone. My name is Becky Helms. I am a nurse in Houston, Texas. I work down in the Med Center at Methodist Hospital. I've been a nurse for about 13 years now. And about a year and a half ago, I stepped away from the bedside and now I work in nursing education. So my background is transplant nursing. I worked in a surgical liver ICU for 10 years, and now I do nursing education. So I am the professional guidance, educator, mentor, mom, friend to all of our new hires that are new to the transplant world in the acute care setting. So after they get out of the ICU, the patients go to my units and I help train the nurses to take care of those people. So I'm not like a nursing professor in nursing school. I'm more real time at the bedside teaching. So I kind of got a jump on some social media following and during COVID. I was one of those TikTok nurses that everyone either loved or hated at the time.
Mostly loved. And
mostly loved, yeah. Well, not everyone, but I gathered some traction there. And then last December of 2022, I was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma and started sharing my journey on there. And that has gotten a lot of traction as well and has made people sympathize and empathize with me. And it's helped me inspire people through their own journeys, their health journeys, and just to have a more optimistic look on life. So that's kind of my biggest claim to fame today. So I'm currently cancer-free, which is amazing.
And I was like, make sure we give that spoiler alert. Yeah,
no, we are thriving now. I mean, I'm still getting my routine checkups and my scans and everything. My last one was in December, which was about a year after my diagnosis. And so we're doing good. I had major surgery as well. So I was a patient as well as a nurse. So I have seen it from all angles. So that is what I'm here to talk to you about today, I think.
Yeah, no, it is. And I think that that's exactly something that I think is a huge piece of this and what makes your story that much more interesting. You're just a super interesting person anyway. But I think that hearing that you are sick when you're in the medical community is probably pretty, you know, earth rocking in a lot of ways. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's the typical story of like anytime you get bad news, you remember what you were wearing, where you were sitting, what it smelled like. I was in the hospital because I was getting worked up. So I presented to the hospital with a droopy eyelid and I thought I had just gotten some bad Botox because I do Botox.
Relatable.
Or just hashtag relatable. And luckily, I had not just gotten Botox. So I was like, that can't be it. So it took about 3 weeks to go to the doctor because nurses make the worst patients. And she finally was like, you know, it's 5 days before Christmas. Let's just scan your head to make sure you're not having a stroke or an aneurysm. And I was like, what? I have a Teams meeting at like 2 o'clock. What do you mean I'm going to the ER? So I went to the ER and they ended up working me up for something called myasthenia gravis, which is an autoimmune disorder that stems from an organ called the thymus gland, which is behind your sternum above your heart.
Right.
And they worked me up for this autoimmune disorder. So it attacks the skeletal muscle in your system. It progresses. So mine had started in my eyelid, and that's what triggered that droopiness to happen. And they found a tumor during that workup. So I was in the hospital for those days. But I found out about the tumor by a phone call, because it was after hours and the doctors knew that I was being a bad patient and reading my own chart because I had access to that. And right. I was being a bad patient. And so they wanted to tell me, and, you know, as soon as possible, that they had found a tumor there. So I first learned it was a tumor, went through, you know, the stages of grief. Definitely anger was, and fear was the first one. Yeah. I don't have kids, but I immediately thought about my two nieces. And so that was definitely the first thing I thought of, was not being there to watch them grow up, which I think is relatable to anyone that has kids or close family. So that was definitely scary. I think I'm lucky that I did have the wherewithal and the knowledge to be able to ask questions in real time because of my nursing background, that I was able to not have to research and write down questions. I was able to have like a real-time conversation with the doctors, which really helped. And, you know, I had my mom there being my little scribe. She was writing down everything because she didn't understand what we were talking about.
Right, of course.
So yeah, it was helpful to have someone there to kind of digest. I also would ask my best friends that I work with, whoever was working that day, can you come sit with me when the doctor's talking, just in case I miss something? Because, you know, I'm going to try and leave my emotions out of it. But at the end of the day, they're talking about your life. So it's a little scary. So yeah, long story short, I was in shock. And I don't know much about the above the diaphragm. My specialty is below the diaphragm. So all I heard was tumor wrapped up in your blood vessels near your heart. And I thought that was a death sentence.
Yeah.
Thank God it was not.
Well, and I think anyone who hears the word cancer just automatically feels like it's a death sentence.
Well, so funny story, which is something I was going to expand on later. I didn't know it was cancer at the time. There's a common disorder called a thymoma, which is basically a tumor of the thymus gland. And it can be benign or malignant, so bad or good. And so going through the steps, I had to have two surgical biopsies. The first one, the tissue they got came back benign, meaning okay.
Okay.
But the pathologist, who has a lot of experience with tumors and thymomas, said, I am not confident in that decision. I think we need to pinch the other side of the tumor. So they went on the left side first. The second time they went in on the right side. And that was when I didn't really tolerate the surgery. So they ended up having to convert it to an open sternotomy, which is where they had to crack my chest open, which is the type of surgeries you hear about when, you know, you have open heart surgery. That's the kind of thing. So I did not have my heart operated on, but they did remove the tumor. So having that major surgery before I even knew it was cancer was, I think, part of the way I was able to process this a little easier because, you know, big picture, I think of it to like syllabus day in college where you sit down in the first week and you get all this information and you're like, how am I supposed to finish this? And then you take a step back and you're like, well, you have, you know, 6 months to do it. So you're like, oh, okay. So the first step was just getting through the surgery, finding out what this was. And then about 6 days into the recovery, I found out it was actually cancer. So I was able to process the surgery in itself, not thinking about, oh, this is also cancer. I'm going to have to go through chemo after this surgery, et cetera, et cetera. So I got to process it like one step at a time, which was really helpful for my mental health. Because looking back, I'm like, how did you handle all that? And I think that's really the answer, was I got to handle it in pieces. So that's probably why. But yeah, I didn't know it was cancer until about a month after they found the tumor.
So then when you Well, first of all, sharing all of that is just, I mean, it's so much to listen to on the receiving end. And I already knew your story, you know, and so I can only imagine receiving that and receiving that as someone who's loves you and supporting you, like one of your parents or a good friend, like you were saying. Like, I know you were so wrapped up in community throughout this experience. Do you feel like you were ever supporting them as they were hearing things because you were so knowledgeable?
Oh, 100%. I was more worried about my parents than I was about myself, solely because them not understanding the lingo and, you know, not understanding the way the hospital works, not understanding even just basics to like what being inpatient means, like when the nurse is around, when the doctor's around, knowing that if the doctors come in the morning, they're probably not coming back later in that afternoon. So you need to have your questions ready right for the doctor right then. And, you know, things like that, that a day-to-day layperson wouldn't understand about the hospital. So that is something that has become super passionate to me. I've become passionate about is helping people just navigate being a patient in itself, because it's so overwhelming. And then, you know, if you ever have been inpatient, the doctors only see you for about 6 minutes and the nurses are there for 12 hours. So, you know, become friends with your nurses.
Yeah. I mean, well, there's so many pieces of this that I think are, it's like just you being a nurse in general, you do know all of those things. So in some ways, you can prepare for them, right? Like you can mentally prepare for them. You can know that it's coming. That doesn't mean that you're completely prepared, of course, because you're like not supposed to be the patient.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't fun. I had to relinquish a lot of control. My friends that would come visit that were, you know, nurses or pharmacists, they would always ask my actual nurses who were taking care of me. They'd be like, how is she as a patient? And the sweet nurse was like, she's actually kind of annoying. And he was dead serious. And I laughed because I was like, I know, I have been very annoying. Like, they ordered a CT scan and I called the CT number because I have it memorized from working here for 13 years. And I was like, hey, Madeline, the lady in CT, I was like, can you fit this patient in? They're like, who's the patient? I was like, me. And she was like, what? And I was like, yeah, I think I'm just going to get my mom to wheel me down there. And the nurse was like, what are you doing? Like, hang up. And I was like, sorry, I was just trying to help you out.
Like, I'm just trying to move things along, but not make you feel like you're not doing your job. But also, I want things to be done my way.
Exactly. Well, I know the timing. You know, I knew if I didn't get this scan before noon, I wasn't going to have any answers because the doctors were coming around. So that was the kind of stuff that I was like, I'm not staying here. You know, we were at a countdown till Christmas when I got admitted. Yes. So I was like, I ain't staying here past Christmas.
Yes.
We're getting out before Christmas.
Well, and I think it's like one of those things that almost you have all of this education now, not only as the nurse, but also as the patient. And I feel like there's just like this huge correlation with your knowledge and supporting your community, even though you were the person who needed the support.
Yeah. But, you know, I think that's part of my therapy was talking out loud about it, which obviously I didn't start sharing my journey until about a month and a half in because I was a little nervous. Obviously, when you put a lot of stuff out there, when you kind of go ghost and stop talking, people get worried and assume the worst. So I knew it was going to be a commitment to kind of keep talking about it. But I also wanted a few more answers first, which I think anyone who's gone through any sort of health issues, whether it be physical, fertility, you know, you kind of want to get some answers before you spew your stuff out and about. But once I started talking about it out loud to my friends and to my social media, the response I got was mind-blowing. Like, so supportive, so many people in the same boat every day. This inspired me. I'm going through the same thing. I was diagnosed a month after you. You know, you're so strong. Because I would show the good and the bad. I made a point to show the days where I didn't feel well. I made a point to show the days I was really struggling mentally, just because I think it's important to see the big picture when you're going through something that scary.
Yeah. I mean, I remember following along and watching, and there was a, this is so funny, but I remember a day that you were struggling to put your eyelashes on after your eyelashes had fallen off. And I remember thinking and having family members who've lost their eyelashes because of chemo. And, you know, just I remember thinking like, man, I wish my mom had experienced cancer and chemo and all the things. And I remember thinking, I wish my mom had had this like funny, but very real
yeah.
video of her trying to get her damn eyelashes on. Like, because I remember watching my mom do that and it being this like very, you know, only hard moment. There was not a lot of joy in it. And she felt very alone in it.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I had my chest cracked open. I had chemo. I had port. I also had ocular shingles. I lost my grandmother. I lost my dog. All of this within like the first few months of chemo. And the hardest part still to this day was losing my hair. And I'll go to the grave saying that. That is something no one can prepare you for no matter what. And now I love my hair. I'm rocking it. So
You really are. And it's so cute.
But there were some dark days there for a little bit, for sure.
Well, and I think too, like a piece of this that no one can really prepare you for, that like people really aren't alone in, is that even if you don't think that you're a vain person, the vanity that comes along with, oh my gosh, my whole body is changing, you know, and that I think that is true of so many different parts of life, but it's just most extreme in chemo and losing your hair.
Yeah. Well, it just happened so fast. Like it took 6 days. And for those that knew me, I mean, I had long, I mean, I was literally Becky with the good hair. I mean, I still am.
Yeah.
My hair was definitely what I thought was my identity. And that is something I've come to learn has not been part of my identity at all. That short or long hair, I still am just as beautiful, still just as confident, still just as loved. So I think that's super important to remember. But yeah, I mean, it was a mind bender for sure.
Yeah. And I think something you just kind of mentioned, and I feel like you talked about kind of coming into it with your community, right? Like you like slowly came to your community and said, hey, this is what's going on with me. Do you feel like there was some, you mentioned fear, but like, do you feel like there was just this piece of, I don't know how they're going to respond?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There were some days where I would just post and, you know, I couldn't even get through all the messages I would get back. But it truly was therapy. Like some people say journaling or reading is their therapy. Mine was filming these mini vlogs, I called them, because it was just such, I don't know, talking out loud about it and then getting this instant feedback in a positive way, which I know social media can be very negative depending on what you're using it for or how the people are responding and commenting.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I was never worried there was going to be any negative connotation other than if my health did take a turn for the worse, I think it would have been a lot harder to share stuff. But that's why I just made it a point to show the good, the bad, and the ugly, because it's not all rainbows and butterflies in life ever, whether you're going through a cancer diagnosis or just whatever's happening in your life. Everyone's bad days are their bad days. You can't compare them. So,
yeah. And I think I like that's so huge, because I think about people who in general feel like social media is a place where they only feel alone. Where I feel like you did such a good job of showing us that it is such it can be a positive place for community.
Yeah.
Did you feel like it was a place where you had more people showing up for you than you thought you would?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I can only imagine that. I feel like because I feel like it's a place where you're so loved in a wonderful way. Do you ever feel like that feels lonely because it's not this like people that are actually physically around you? Or do you feel like, you know what I mean? Like, is there like some weird kind of
like mental game of, yes, these people support me, but also like they're not actually here, or like I don't know them.
Oh, you know? Yeah. I mean, that's, I feel like that's kind of something that comes with whatever form of or little or big fame that you have, especially like a celebrity. You know, they say it's so lonely on the road, and you're like, but you're surrounded by all these fans.
Yeah.
But no, when, you know, the day to day, when it comes down to it, you are alone. But I was very lucky to have a community in Houston. I moved in with my parents for 9 months during all of this. So they annoyed me every day. I'm just joking.
Well, I was just thinking like, man, that's also hard that when you're in your 30s to move in with your parents, you know, but you also have, like, please help me.
You have your chest cracked open and try and do laundry, and then you'll realize very quickly that you made the right choice moving in with your parents.
Absolutely.
So I moved in with them, and then my friends were more than receptive and supportive. And, you know, I kept a log of cards or flowers or gifts or donations to charities. And my LLS, Lymphoma and Leukemia Society, I did a fundraising for that. So I kept a log of all these things that people did for me. And I basically went through like two journals worth of pages of people doing stuff. And I think that's a testament to who I am as a person and who my family and my parents are as people, because their friends really showed up for them as well. And they would do the same for anyone that they loved as well, which I think is important. So yes, sometimes it did feel lonely, but at the same time, my physical friends and family, I never felt alone with them.
Yeah, I think that something that you just said that is huge is it is a representation of who you are, that you are so loved and so taken care of. It is a representation of your parents. And I think that's such a reminder as someone going through their day-to-day life of like, how I treat people will impact the way that they treat me, whether it's today or in 6 months when I need them or whatever.
Absolutely.
And I think something that I want to make sure I ask you is, I mean, you just shared a lot of the ways that your community showed up for you. Do you feel like for those of us who are supporting someone who's going through a health diagnosis, what are some tips you would give people supporting their people? Because like I having gone through some of my own health journey, I feel like there's things that I could say like, hey, this really worked for me and really felt like I felt supported. But I don't even know if my husband would say the same things that I would, you know? So I think like you can kind of give that perspective as a nurse and what you've seen in the hospital as a nurse. And so like maybe as your own self, what are some things that you feel like really help people when their people love on them in blank way?
That is a great question. And I get asked that every day.
Yeah.
So much so that I've had to stop responding to people because I'm like, I just need to like write a book about it or something, because
we'll start here first.
Let's start this podcast. So I think the most important thing that you need to remember is to try not to empathize with the person unless you truly have gone through it. So saying, it's just hair, it'll grow back. Like, you don't know that. You've never lost your hair if you say that to me. I got a lot of, well, Hodgkin's lymphoma, isn't that the good cancer to get? Like, shut up. No cancer is good cancer, right?
Sure is not.
So, you know, not trying to empathize with them because you don't know what else to say. So that being said, okay, Becky, well, what do I say to someone?
Yeah.
I think being a listener is huge. Really practicing those skills, asking what can I do for you today versus, you know, how are you doing? That's a very loaded question. Asking them for specific things that you can pray for. For example, you know, when I was going through my surgery, like pray that my pain's well controlled. That's something those people can specifically focus on.
Yeah.
And then just not having them. And this is kind of complicated because it depends on how well you know the person, but just like showing up with food and leaving it on their doorstep versus saying, I'm going to bring this by, just kind of showing up and doing things like offering, like, especially if it's someone that's like has kids and their husband's working, you know, getting your friends together and like maybe paying for a maid for that week and like just stuff around the house that helps. Think about things that you do on the day to day that if you didn't have energy to do, what would those be and how can you help that person? So flowers are great and everything, but, you know, flowers die. So something that can really help in the day to day, I think, is important. Food is great. Comfy socks, blankets are great, but you can only have so many of those. So I think that's important. And then, you know, just checking in on them. It was really hard during the journey. I would get calls and texts and, you know, messages on Instagram. And then once I was healed, it was like the calls kind of stopped, the texts stopped, not because they stopped thinking about me, but I wasn't in that acute phase of what was going on. And it, like, selfishly, it felt very lonely because I was like, wait, don't forget about me. When really it was like, they're forgetting about you because you're getting better. Like, you should be happy. But at the same time, you know, that was kind of hard. So still following up, because that is a whole nother podcast I could talk about, the post chemo, post cancer, post journey emotions of where all of a sudden you've been working towards these milestones. You get to ring the bell, you get your clean scan. And then like the next day, you're just supposed to wake up and go back to work. Like, what? No one really is there to help you with that transition back to real life. So that's where your community comes in as well. Having those people be there for you and just being kind to yourself, taking it one day at a time, because you can't do it all. I went on two vacations, like 5 days apart after my chemo, and it was the worst decision I've ever made. I mean, I had a blast, don't get me wrong, but my body was like, are you insane?
Yeah.
I was like hurting for like 2 weeks after that trip. I just overdid it. So really taking time to bounce back is super important, whether that's physically or mentally. You know, if you need to not go straight back to work, then listen to your mind, listen to your body. So that's important. So summing that up, being kind to yourself, being a good listener, and trying to think of ways that you can help without having to ask the person, because sometimes they're just too exhausted to even pick up their phone and ask for help. So that is, those are kind of my best things, and just listening.
Yeah. I mean, I just wrote down all the stuff you said, because I feel like it's all so important. And I think is true, no matter what the health diagnosis is, I think that there's lots of pieces of that, or whatever hard thing someone's going through, right? Like, to acknowledge what this whole podcast is about, which is that people aren't actually alone, even when they feel very alone.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that I love what you said about not empathizing, because in a way that makes it feel like they're not being actually heard, right?
Like,
I'm telling you about this really hard thing. I don't want to hear that, like, you know, your mom's brother's sister also had XYZ happen to them.
Exactly.
Or, you know, like, that's actually not connecting me to community, unless you're going to have me call your mom's brother's sister friend, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I think that that is really important. I want to follow that up with I hear you saying being kind to yourself, but I just want to ask the question. What is one piece of advice you would give someone coping with a major health diagnosis? Like, only one.
One piece. Well, hold on. I wanted to asterisk what you said, because I know there's a lot of people listening that are going to be like, oh my gosh, I literally just asked someone how they were doing. Or I said, my brother's sister's mom, cousin went through cancer. Like, should I feel bad? Like, no.
True.
You're human. That is the way that we are taught to respond to those stories. But if you hear me, just be a listener and say, I hear you. I understand this sucks. How can I support you? As opposed to trying to relate with them, because if you haven't gone through it, you can't relate.
Yeah. Wait, I want to add this too, because I think what you just said, I'm like firing on all cylinders thinking about that, because I do also think you're right about, like, even asking, like, how are you doing, can feel really hard on your hardest day.
right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how I'm doing. I feel really bad. I don't even know if I know that I trust that you're going to do the right thing with the information that I'm about to tell you. So like,
yeah.
Do I want to actually tell you how I'm doing? Because the answer is shitty, right? Or whatever it is. And I think that just asking or saying like, I'm here for you. If you ever want to talk, I'm here for you. Or I'm thinking about you. Mm-hmm. Also goes a long way. I mean, that's my opinion.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I feel like that's huge.
Yes, because the how are you doing can be very loaded. And also, if you are the person going through this traumatic event, do not feel bad about not responding to people. I think that was something that took me a long time to get over because I'm very social. I have a lot of friends. I have a lot of family. I was like, I need to respond to everyone. And then there was one day where I just could not get out of bed. And I was like, my phone's on do not disturb. I didn't talk to anyone. And no one thought twice about like, why isn't she responding to me? You know, they know what you're going through. And then just the following up with, I know you're probably tired, but I'm still thinking about you. That is just enough to say, okay, they're still thinking about me. They're still praying for me, whatever their routine is. So don't feel guilty about not responding to all these messages and phone calls and emails and thank you notes, like, yeah, those didn't happen. Here's my thank you to everyone.
on this podcast.
Thank you, everyone, because you don't have the energy for that. So will you ask the question one more time?
I will. What piece of advice would you give someone who's coping with a major health diagnosis if you could only tell them one thing?
I don't even say day by day. I say hour by hour, because you might be feeling great one day, 1 hour, the next hour, you don't. When I, you know, was going through chemo, I used to say I only have energy for one activity, whether that was going to work, that was considered an activity, or going on a walk. I couldn't do both. So it was kind of picking the activity for the day of what you wanted to do. And on the days where you felt good, do what you wanted to do. Don't feel like you had to like go to work or had to do something, unless, you know, you absolutely have to. We have bills to pay, I get. But, you know, take it hour by hour and just try and find the joy and the optimism where you can, because there's going to be a lot of dark days. So if you can find something positive out of every day, then that is going to be a little bit of a motivation to keep you going.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was really good. And I also think you have supported me in my recent health journey. And I think that I took so to heart when you told me, like, take it on the good days, enjoy the good days, and like lean into them, because you don't know what tomorrow is going to look like for you. And I think that is huge when you don't have the energy level that is typical for you, or the social level that is typical for you. You know, uh-huh. I think that is so huge, because that really is that joy, like finding those joyful days. So
yeah, absolutely.
I love that. Okay.
Or even like, if I had my favorite nurse getting chemo, I was like, I could have had Joe Schmo today and it would have been awful. But it's like, no, you had Susie, who's like your favorite. And you know, yeah, it still sucked. You were getting chemo, but it was like finding that positive in the negative. And I mean, it is a mindset marathon. It did not come easy. You have to actively work to maintain that mindset. So if you have a bad day, allow yourself to have a bad day. It's not going to be rainbows and sunshines. Don't get me wrong.
That is huge.
Yeah. But yeah, this did not come easy. Like, I'm very happy now, but let's be honest. There were some really dark days. And I will say the one thing that got me out of a really dark day was going to Mexico, going to the beach, which sounds very obvious, but it snapped me out of what would have been a very dark depression pretty quickly. And I was lucky enough to feel okay doing it. It was my best friend's bachelorette party, which normally I would have said absolutely not, but I was like, I need to do this for me. And I'm so glad I did. So just changing up your routine, if you have the energy to, is helpful as well.
Totally. And I think that something that I know about you to be true, and I would tell you that most people that are your followers that know about you, is that
humor is such a part of who you are, right? Like you like exude joy. And I think your honesty through your process was such a, you know, so impactful. And I think that I want to hear, like, how do you feel like, if you did at all, did you feel like there was pressure on your hard days to like stay positive because you are like typically positive and funny and that's like your whole vibe? Or were you like, it's cool, I today sucks?
I think in the beginning I was like, I don't want to show all this, but very quickly I was like, this is not fake it till you make it. I am exhausted. I'm having a bad day. And again, I would usually film it because I'm not a big journaler. I would film it and not post it immediately and just to like get it off my chest. And then I was like, you know, that was a vulnerable moment. And then I would post it. And even if it was just one person being like, that helped me so much today because I've been feeling like crap and you've been so happy and so positive. So to see you have a day like this made me feel like, you know, I am normal. I am having this bad day, even though you always seem so positive. So no, I think I can say I didn't feel that pressure towards the end of it. I enjoyed being as real as I could. So
yeah, that totally makes sense. And I think that it's one of those things. I am a typically pretty bubbly person, and I like struggle sometimes with that myself on a hard day. And so, and I remember watching your stuff and being like, okay, well, Becky's honest about it. I can too. Yeah. I think that a lot of people have felt that way about you. So your impact is so significant.
Yeah. It's that fine line of, you know, not wanting to display your personal life on social media, but also if you do have that following and you do have that confidence and you do have, like, to me, it feels like it was a gift. I was born to do this type of thing, helping people. And obviously, I'm a caregiver. That is my job. So taking that on the road with my own personal experience, I think, obviously, is not for everyone. It's not everyone's cup of tea. But I think it's important, and it's definitely a calling for me. So no, I don't think it's for everyone. But I think you will get so much more back than you think you will if you just open up and have a real conversation with someone instead of pretending like everything's rainbows and butterflies, because I assure you it is not, no matter what you're going through.
Well, yeah. And that's, I think, life in general. And I think people feel like often that they have to have this major life event to seek mental support, like support with mental health. What are your thoughts and feelings on that? Like, do you feel like this, I mean, I know you've always kind of been an advocate, but do you feel like this was, gave you the space to be more of an advocate for mental health support? Or do you think it's just been like, it's just so ingrained in who you are that it's like, of course I'm going to support my mental health?
Yeah, no, I think it was a combination. You know, I've been in and out of therapy for years now, and I do feel like I'm finally in a good spot to where I have the tools to pull myself out of a depressive episode or this anxiety-ridden episode. So I don't see a therapist on a weekly basis or anything right now. But again, I'm not going through an acute phase of something. And I do feel like I have the building blocks I need, which is what therapy has taught me. So that's important, seeing that I got there from going to therapy and being able to pick up on triggers and cues of like, you need to get out of the house today, or you need to do this today because that's what's going to break this cycle. That's all stuff that I was taught and I've learned. But I think talking about it again, like I said, you're going to get so much more out of it, whether it's to a trusted friend or to a therapist. But finding that one or two people that can really be your rock, that you can call at 2 a.m., 3 a.m., knowing there's going to be no judgment, is super important. Just feeling like you have someone you can trust to talk to. But a lot of times it's nice to have a third party of someone who doesn't know your whole story, like a therapist who is like trained professionally in that field.
Yeah.
To help you through that as well. Because having a chronic illness, a major health diagnosis, whatever you want to call it, it can take a toll on your mental health no matter what. And being the caregiver for a person going through it is super important. I don't think I cannot get out of this podcast without thanking my parents and my family and friends, because if it weren't for them, this and my doctors, I mean, you know, everyone, if it weren't for my community, then I wouldn't be here today. So I think that's super important to recognize is the caregivers, because they're also the real ones. They're going through it just as much, but they just, it's harder because they're not going through it physically, but they are emotionally with you. So,
yeah, I mean, I think I love that you just said that, because I do think that, again, that is a testament to who you are. And, you know, it is. It just is. And I think that's important to acknowledge. Like, I really do. And I think also you're so right that there's a theory in the mental health field called the circle theory, right? And like the person going through the experience can talk to anyone in any of their outer circles about it, right? But then their next circle outside of them can talk about it outwardly, right, to anyone, but they can't talk about their own mental health struggles inwardly to the person that is impacting it, right? And then the circles get bigger and bigger. And I think that that's such a huge piece of being a caretaker, is that like your person can show you that is struggling or having a hard time or has this health diagnosis can talk all the time about, you know, what's going on with them. But like the people on the outside aren't necessarily talking inwardly like, well, because you have cancer, I'm really tired because I'm doing your laundry or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think it is so important for the people going through it to have gratitude when they can, and the caregivers to be acknowledged when they can as well, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Are you ready for the rapid fire five?
I am. My seat.
It's so funny. This is what most people are the most nervous about, but I'm going to ask you five questions and I just want you to tell me the first thing that you think of. Okay. So the first question is, finish the sentence. Community is
showing up like people that show up for you when you don't ask for help.
Oh, yes. I love that second piece of it. Okay. If you could read one book or watch one show or listen to one podcast, other than this one, of course, we're on repeat, what would it be?
I was like, I don't read very much. So I love Heather McMahon's podcasts. Absolutely not. She's one of my favorite comedians. So I highly recommend her to listen to when you're having a bad day.
Yes, I love her too. I went to her show. It was so fun.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay. The best version of self-care for you personally is?
Oh, saying no, because it's taught me a long time. It's taken me a long time to say no to stuff. / sitting on the couch and recharging my extroverted battery.
Yes.
Because, so being able to say no sounds very broad, but that is a huge form of self-care.
Yeah. Is that something you learned more in this journey?
Oh my gosh. That's when I learned it.
Yeah. You're like, I didn't have that before 2020.
That's when I learned it. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel that.
Yeah.
Okay. What is one thing you are proud of?
Like, is being alive just too cheesy?
No, it's like so accurate and wonderful.
Go for 4 and 5. One thing I'm proud of. Yeah, just honestly, my strength getting through this last year has been pretty crazy looking back. So,
yeah,
for sure.
You should be proud of that. I'm proud of you for that.
Yeah.
What is one thing that you are deeply grateful for?
So on a surface level, living in a city where I had resources to healthcare, because I used to just live in this fantasy world of, I want to move to London because I just want to live abroad. And I think about if something like this had happened while I was not close to family or to great medical care, this would be a much different outcome. So grateful for that. And then like family is a no-brainer at this point. I know people say that all the time, but they have become so much more important to me over the last year than I could have ever imagined. So family, and of course friends too, but you know, blood is blood. So like I said, being able to move in with my parents for 9 months strengthened our relationship, which is, I think, something God had planned all along. So yeah, definitely great access to medical care and family.
I love those answers and couldn't agree more. Well, I'm just so glad that people are going to have one more touch point with you. And I feel like your story, it cuts deep for people who are experiencing it, people who are the community for the people who are experiencing it. And I'm just so grateful that you took the time out for this podcast. And
yeah,
I do want to ask you, is there any way that people could follow along? Where should they follow you?
Oh my gosh, I thought you'd never ask. So I'm on my social media page, my Instagram. My handle is at I want to quit my day job. Literally, that is my handle. And it makes people laugh because I originally started it as an outlet for my singing. I like to sing. And now people ask me every day, have you gotten any closer to quitting your day job? And the answer is no.
Yeah.
I'm still here, unfortunately.
She's currently at work. I'm watching.
I'm literally at work.
Yeah. Well, I'm so hopeful that more people can connect with you and be inspired by your story, because I know I have been, and I am just so grateful for you.
Yeah. I encourage anyone heard this today who doesn't follow me or know who I am, or you have more questions, reach out. I am pretty good at answering my messages. It is a form of therapy for me. So you are not bothering me. You're not creepy. You're not being a stalker. I put my life out there for a reason. So come on down.
I love it. Yes, come on down, y'all. Okay. Thank you so much, Becky. Bye.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to help us reach more listeners, please share it with someone you know, post about it on social media, and leave a rating or a review. To see what's coming next, follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Nick Finn Counsel, or visit our website at finnegancounseling.org. Before I go, I'd also like to thank the people who made this project possible. My wonderful friends and guest experts who joined me each episode, our production team at Three Wire Creative, our editor, Giselle Dixon, and the amazing leadership team and supporters at Nick Finnegan Counseling Center in Houston, Texas. Until next time,